It is, as I said last night, wonderful to see everybody here today on what I can only assume is a nice day outside, especially because, you know, there are two reasons why Jews don't go to shul: good weather and bad weather. So despite whichever is out there, we're here together, and that is a wonderful thing and a cause for celebration. And I want to talk about a particular kind of celebration. Rabbi Maurice Lamb, in one of his books, talks about when he first went into the army as a chaplain. And the sergeant who gave the opening course welcoming them into the army, at the very beginning, stood in front of the room of all these chaplains being inducted, and on the wall, he drew in the middle of this wall a black dot. And he said, "Now I'm going to leave the room for 10 minutes. I want you to stare at that, and when I come back, I want you to tell me what you see." He left, and there were all these men, said Rabbi Lamb, staring at this dot. And he came back and he said, "What do you see?" And one after another, they said, "We see a black dot." And he said, "You're all wrong. What you see is a small black dot on a large white wall." But he said, "That's how we live our lives. It's a beautiful day. You're alive, you're breathing, those whom you love are healthy, but you have a problem parking, and you get home that day and you say it was a miserable day." It's the black dot. And it is a natural human tendency. When I fast, I get a headache. And every time I think about the headache, it's the black dot. Because when I think about why I'm here and why I'm fasting, and why you're here and why we're together, it's a huge white wall. Now, as all of you know, this year I was lucky enough to have my illness turn into just a black dot. I didn't know this, because she is a kind woman and didn't tell me till months later. But after the diagnosis and the surgery and everything that we went through, a couple of months later, my wife looked at me and she said, "I want you to know that of all the possibilities that seemed likely when you were in surgery and afterwards when I talked to the doctor, this was the least likely, that you would just be okay, that you would resume your life and we would resume our lives. That was the one that I didn't think would happen." So for me, it was a big white wall, and is. And then, of course, people say, "Well, why did it happen to you? It must have happened to you for a reason. You got to figure out the reason." And a big part of me wants to say that it happened to me for no reason. That's my reason. But whatever the truth, whether I will look back one day and say, "Aha, now I know the reason," one thing I am sure of is that whatever happens to you in life of any significance, you can create a reason. You can make it meaningful. You can use it in a way to do something worthwhile that you would not have done had this difficulty not come into your life. Doesn't mean that you're glad of having had that problem, or that loss, or that tragedy. It just means that you're not going to let it only be a tragedy. You're also going to do something with it. And when I came back to the synagogue, God knows, people were ready to do. All sorts of different ways and all sorts of different ideas were proposed about what we might do. We had a beautiful dinner honoring all the rabbis. But that wasn't the idea. The idea proposed by one of our members was that we ask a sofer, a scribe, to write a Torah. And everybody could be part of that Torah by dedicating for themselves a letter, a verse, a chapter, whatever. It would be in honor of the recovery of the rabbi, but it really is the Sinai Torah. And this member was close to a sofer in Israel, a scribe in Israel, whom we enlisted in the writing of this Torah, and he came here, and many of you met him, a lovely, wonderful human being. The picture of somebody who is very faithful and very accepting and very open, and became a sofer, by the way, because of an experience that he had in the war in Lebanon, when he wanted to learn how to write a Torah for his fallen comrade, because he was in a tank war and miraculously survived, but his friend didn't. And so he painstakingly learned how to write a Torah, and when he was done, his teacher said, "You can't stop with this, you're too good. You have to keep doing this. This is what you were meant to do." And so he has been in Jerusalem writing our Torah. And what I would like to do is try to justify and explain and inspire first about the Torah and why that is the right thing for us to do together, and second, why I hope you will come with me and with Eliana and with Samara to Jerusalem to get that Torah. First, the Torah. You know, this is a book, however ancient, that has lost none of its power. And it is your book, our book. In fact, when they used to induct, I don't know if this is still done, I hope it is, and some of you will know. When they used to bring people into the Haganah, into the Israel Defense Forces, in the early days, they would give them a chumash, that is, a Bible, the Torah, and a gun. And this is what the commanding officer was supposed to say to every single soldier. The Torah is yours. The gun, you have to earn. That you have to show you deserve. But the Torah is the natural birthright of every Jew. It's ours. And that sense that it is ours and that we cherish it, I want you to know that that sense radiates beyond our own community. I don't know if you remember a year and a half ago in Valley Beth Shalom, there was a fire. And it was early in the morning. And there was nobody there but the maintenance men. Hispanic Catholics, most of them, who ran into the burning synagogue to save the Torahs and carried them all out one by one, risking their lives, because they knew by the conduct of the Jews that what was in there was sacred. It is a mitzvah to write a Torah. It is one of the 613 mitzvot. And that sentence that tells us that we should write a Torah appears at the end of the Torah in a parsha called Ha'azinu. And Ha'azinu is one long poem. And it says, you should write this down. And one of the medieval commentators says, what's this? It's not just the poem, it's the whole Torah, because the whole Torah is a poem. People read it in all sorts of ways, but it's a poem. And it is poets after all. Moses, David, who have set the tone for our people. There is a poetry in our devotion to the Torah, even in difficult times. I don't know how many of you have ever heard the story of the Yanof Torah. There was a Nazi work camp where Jews were interred in Yanof. And one of the Jews, before they came to the camp, managed somehow to grab an old fraying Torah and bring it to the Yanov work camp. And when they got there, they took the Torah apart, because it couldn't be found with a Torah. Now remember, it didn't necessarily have the wooden things, just the scroll. You couldn't be found with the scroll, so they took it apart, bit by bit, because you know a Torah is made of sewn leaves. And they buried each leaf in a different place in the camp. And whenever it was the time to read that section of the Torah, they would disinter that part of the Torah and read it and then bury it again. And this went on for 3 years. And then the camp was liberated. And one of the men who was there for the 3 years and had survived went around to all the different places in the camp and reconstituted the entire Torah. And himself sewed it back together again and gave it to his grandson, who was a Russian doctor who was on his way to America. And when he got here, this grandson, he brought it to a rabbi named Rabbi Edward Herman, and he said, this is the Yanof Torah. And he told him the story, later verified by other members of the camp, which no one obviously had heard. And he said, I don't want to give it to a museum, and I don't want to give it to an institution. I want it to go around and be read. And it was, for several years, until it became so fragile that it finally was housed in a synagogue where you can see it outside of San Diego. Can you imagine how deeply the people in that camp loved the Torah? That's why we have to go get our Torah. That's why we have to go to Israel. Because it is true, we could get a Torah here. They make Torahs here. But really, ki mitzion tetzei Torah. If you're going to get a Torah, and you are lucky enough to be alive at a time when you can go to Israel, who wouldn't go to Israel? You know, for all the fact that Israel is in the news for different things, for troubles and politics and geopolitics and the debates between liberals and conservatives and neoconservatives and neoliberals, for all of that, and I'm not slighting the importance of it, and God bless you, when Yom Kippur is over, you can start arguing again. Let's not lose sight of the fact that this is the first time in thousands of years that we have an Israel. That hasn't changed. There is a military cemetery in Jerusalem where soldiers who have died are buried. And there's one grave there of a soldier who was buried in Jerusalem, but he wasn't a soldier in the Israeli army. He was a British soldier. And he died just as the state was founded. And without family in Britain, the question then arose, where do you bury this soldier because he was a Jew? So, do you bury this Jewish soldier in Israel, or do you send him back to Britain? And after much deliberation, it was decided to bury him in Israel. And I want to read you what it says on his grave. It says, died far away from his country, but at home. It was the first time in thousands of years that we could write that. Far away from his country, but at home. I tell you, if you have not seen Israel, you don't know. You don't know. You cannot know. You can't understand it without seeing it. And that's true, I know, of everything, but most especially and powerfully, this place that is the focus of so many promises and prayers. When you go to Israel, suddenly the conflicts disappear. You know they're there. You see soldiers patrolling the streets. You know in the border there is danger, but that isn't what you feel. You feel something else. You feel that you are in the center of so many realized and tangled and unrealized and yet to be realized dreams. You feel, by the way, that you are in a modern country. I mean, Israel is the home of more software startup firms than any other country in the world except the United States. Not per capita. In absolute terms, this little country of 6-7 million people, this country that is a fraction of the size of Los Angeles in population, and about the size of what? Rhode Island. In square miles. And they have more science and technology and universities and poets and writers and singers and theater and culture than they know what to do with. I remember right after the Russian immigration, there was a concert violinist on every street corner. And you thought, now, the amazing thing about that was that had that immigration gone to another country and the concert violinist played on every street corner, wouldn't have been a big deal. But in Israel, where everybody loves the arts, they would gather around and they would have an appreciative audience and the audience would all know what it was they were playing and whether they were good or not. It was different. It was Israel. You can stay here. You can spend that week in May right here in the United States. And I promise you, with 98% certainty, you will have a nice, unmemorable week. And if I ask you 2 years later, what did you do that week in May? You won't remember. And I can tell you with 100% certainty that if you go with us, you won't forget it. In Auschwitz and after, the poet Charlotte Dembo wrote something beautiful. She was a survivor who died in 1985, and she wrote, "I beg you, do something. Learn a dance step. something to justify your existence. Learn to walk and laugh, because it would be too senseless, after all, for so many to have died while you live doing nothing with your life. We all do things with our lives, but there are moments when we get a chance to do something special, something different. I mean, look, you can go anywhere you want. You can go to Italy. You'll be impressed. You'll be elevated. You'll be moved. But I tell you, come to Israel, and this land of stones will stir your soul. It's not the same. It's not only a land of history, it's a land of heroes. There is a memorial in Israel for every 16 fallen soldiers, because every one of them counts. Go to Europe, there is a memorial for every 10,000. But there's also something that you won't find in Israel. You won't find any monuments to victories. Go look for the monument for the victory of the 67 war, you won't find it. Look for the memorial of victory in the 1948 war, it's not there. Because they were victories of necessity, not of joy. And because each one cost the memorials to so many fallen soldiers. So that's not there. But I will tell you what is there. What is there is the first Jewish government since before Rabbi Akiva. What's there is the grave of Maimonides, the greatest mind and perhaps the greatest man the Jewish people ever produced. What's there is the grave of Herzl, that mad dreamer whose dreams brought into being a state. What's there is a street made of stone down which every pilgrim and poet has walked for thousands of years. And right there on that street is a little storefront owned by a black Ethiopian Jew whose younger brother was born on an airplane when the state of Israel sent El Al jets to rescue Jews in the midst of a war and bring them home. You want to see him? He's a miracle. Because after thousands of years of living on the parched plains of Ethiopia, finally that community was reunited and we heard about them and we brought them back. And you can see him, just come to Israel. Our trip will be going in May, which is during school. The Cantor Goal is taking a trip in June, which is when the kids are out of school. There are lots of possibilities. But go. If you've gone before, go again. It changes so fast. And there is so much more to see and so much more to do. On that same street, if you go further down, is a brand new hotel just refurbished in which we will stay. And nearby is a synagogue as old as time in which we will pause and wonder and remember our own memories and the memories of others, and in which we will pray. There is no other place like this on God's earth. And there is no other place in the world that more deserves to be called God's earth. And it's yours. It's ours. And we must see it. There is a tradition that there is a special letter of the Torah for each soul. And that means that we are sitting here this morning a living embodiment of the Yam of Torah. All of us. And the only way to get a complete Torah is for all of us to be together. To bring ourselves to Jerusalem. To bring ourselves home. I'm going to Israel to thank God that I'm alive. But all of us should go to Israel for the same reason. We should all thank God that we're alive. We should all be grateful that we live in this time where each of us can be a letter . You know that beautiful story that Rabbi Shlomo Riskin tells about the first time he traveled to the Soviet Union, and there was a crowd of Jews in front of him who had no Jewish education. And he told them the story of the little boy in the back of the synagogue who didn't know how to pray, but he just recited the alphabet. He just recited the alphabet, and he said, "Let God put the words together." And one of the Jews in the back of the group said, "But Rabbi, we don't know the alphabet." And he said, "Then repeat it after me." And he yelled out Aleph, and they all yelled Aleph. And he went through the alphabet. And they prayed, because each one was a letter. There is a story about the Jews who were smuggled out of Europe at the end of World War II past the communist Iron Curtain. You know, the Haganah regularly sent groups of Jews underground to go and smuggle Jews in Eastern Europe who wanted to come to Israel. Sometimes they made it, sometimes they got caught at the border. But there is one story of a group of Jews who were stopped at the southern border of Russia. They had gone there pretending they were Greeks so that they could get out of the Soviet Union. And this border guard said to them, "Your papers say that you're Greek." And they all said, "Yes." And he said, "Say something in Greek." And they didn't know what to do. So one of them said, "Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad." And the border guard said, "Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Leolam Va'ed." "Now you can go." The Torah, the people, and the land are one. And we have felt that all over the world. So come with us. Come with me and Eliana and Samara, or go later with Cantor Gold and Ricky and Hannah and David. Hold the Torah. Stand in the streets of Jerusalem and hold the Torah and feel the tears as you say Shema out loud in the streets of Jerusalem, and you feel the very walls answer you back. Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Leolam Va'ed. For however brief a period, let's go home together and look up at the sky that has seen the prayers of so many of our people for so many years, and just thank God that we are alive. And thank God that in every sense we can be part of the people Israel and hold God's Torah in our hands and in our hearts. Shana Tova.